It started.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to Code Camp 2019, day two. This is all about CSS. And so our goal today is to build off on the same code pen we were working on yesterday, which had the HTML, but now we're going to focus a bit more on the CSS. And so we're going to spend just a few moments to talk about the terminology of CSS so that everybody has a base working similar knowledge base. And then we are going to dive into some really cool advanced items that hopefully you'll be able to apply to your own projects. So you can grab the handout there in the chat room at wpstudio.com/chat, and you can start reading about why you use CSS. And that's not so much what we're going to cover today. But what we will do is basically this next 5 to 10 minutes is the crash course on CSS terminology, so that you have the actual terms used for different things. You'll know what they are. So when you're reading other blog posts or you're talking to other developers, you can sound smart. So that you can actually do what you want to do. So CSS, the cascading style sheet, is a list of statements. So basically everything on a style sheet, everything on that .css file that's on your themes or your website is a list of statements. So a statement has two possibilities. You have a statement that is an at rule, or you have a statement that is a rule set. These are the two options that you have. The at rule is very easy because when we tell people our email account, we say it's benjamin@wpstudio.com. What does that at mean? It's this. It's the email at sign, the a swirl circle. So an at rule is anytime you see that with the word import. Now there are other types of at rules as well, but this is the most used. We'll take a look at a few of the others that we use. And so when we have an import URL, special CSS.css, it's going to add another style sheet that exists at this location in the server into this style sheet. So into that list of statements. So that's what an at rule is. It has that at sign. The other one is a rule set. A rule set has two parts. The first part is the selector. So if we were to look at this area, this first body font size 18 pixels, the body is the selector. And then whatever is inside the braces is the declaration block. So the rule set is the selector. Now that could be a class, it could be an ID, it could be a pseudo element, some type of thing. Everything outside is going to be your selector. Everything inside is a declaration block, even if there's only one. Now, a single declaration is just a declaration, but it's also a declaration block, even if there's just one. So this is where if we also have color, something like that. Yes, everything inside here is a declaration block because we've got two of them. Each individual one is a declaration. Now a declaration in CSS has two parts, a property name and then the property value. So that's your terminology. You now know everything inside is a declaration, everything outside is a selector. We have a property name and a property value. And does your, BG, does your car have a font size of 18 pixels? Smaller, okay. Okay, so Now, I'm just going to highlight this because I did say that we have different rule sets. Let me get rid of this because that color is going to mess up what we're going to do. There are multiple rule sets. Sorry, the at rules. At rules, as I already said, you can do an import. You can say, and let me just do that. I'm going to end this so that we can have a character set where you can set the character set of an external style sheet. That will always appear at the very beginning. And this might be if you have, and here's where why you do this. Anybody, let me ask anybody if you know why you would use a character set. Because we're going to use it in just a moment. If we had something like, so we have, let's just say on our anchor tag, we're going to do a before content and we're going to add something into here. So if you needed to add international letters or you needed to add an Arabic script, a font, or you needed something to go in because it's just going to output the actual whatever you've typed into there. So we need to make sure that if we're doing this in another language and we are hard coding like content, it's not going to really do character set for the actual declaration block. It's for when we're inserting and doing some advanced stuff in CSS. And we need to let other browsers know that, hey, you need to understand that some of this stuff is not going to be English. It's going to be in, you know, a Cyrillic or something like that. So that's where we use character set. We also have at media. Media allows us to target everything that is wrapped in here, in these braces, to a specific type of media. Now, if we do all, every single type of browser will interpret this code so that if we did, watch this. Let's do body, font size, body. I gotta get it right. Font size, 26 pixels. So notice how the media for all has already modified the page here. But if I change it to print, it's not going to use this. Let's see, can I print from here? Watch this. Let's see if I can pull it off. Now, when I hit print on this, the print preview, I don't know if you guys can see the print preview window. You may not be able to. Oh, you can see it? Perfect. See how it's a much bigger font? Because I'm now in a print. It's not using this first body tag. The media allows us to now say, oh, you're trying to print, so we're going to use a much bigger font. So there's lots of things you can do with this at rule. You can, if you need certain things in Braille. Now, any idea where why you do this with the media Braille? How does a Braille machine print out images? It doesn't. So maybe you do something like this, that every single image tag is a display none. You just kind of clean it up so they don't have to, their Braille will go through and say there's an image there, it's this size, it's all this type of stuff. But you may also want to get rid of pull quotes. Because if they're reading the item and then all of a sudden the pull quote shows up in the middle of a paragraph for a blind person reading your website on Braille, it's going to be like the sentence didn't make sense because there's a sentence inside the sentence. So if you have a client who this is one of those things, and this is an upsell thing where we talk about pure accessibility, where maybe we need to have CSS style sheets where we are interpreting what should be on a Braille machine, what should not be. What if, you have a client who's going to display things on, they're going to go to the website to all their customers, and they are going to do a projection of the website so they can demo certain parts of the website, certain things. Well, what if we just want, maybe you have a pop-up ad so that if somebody is viewing the website on a projector, we're not going to display the pop-up ad because that would just be annoying for the client who's displaying it for the client. So you see, there's some really cool ways that I don't think people take advantage of to really customize the experience just using CSS for their customers and their clients. Okay, there's just a few other at rules. One of them is at page. This is used for paged media. A lot of times you would set different margins for left, right. So we'd have, you know, page left, there'd be a margin left of 5 centimeters. So again, sometimes we're going to use measurements because we're specifically doing, yes, it's a web design, but people could print this stuff out. Page right. Maybe you need those margins at different, depending on which page system you're at. And then another one for the at rule is the font face, where we can specify a custom font to be used on the site. So those are the at rules. Now we get to the declarations. Again, the declarations deal with the selectors. You may see the asterisk. That means every element. So that would be the H1 tag, the div tag, the paragraph tag, the image tag, that any type of tag is going to be affected by this asterisk. Then you have an element selector. That would be something like body tag. You have a class selector. That would be a class. You have an ID selector. And then you have an attribute selector. This is one of these ones where in the input field, go to the submit. So watch what happens when we do this. Color green. So I'm going to go create an input field here. Let's go up to the basic heading just so we can have the same place. Here we are. So if we had an input type text, so here's our input type text. You see that? It's all taken care of. But if we did another input type submit, let's do background. Oh, let's do this. Font size, 25 pixels. Okay, why didn't I get my... Oh, that's because these guys are messing everything up. Okay, so see, now my font size is 25. So these we have... Let me get this back just so you can see it. We have the everything, the element, the class, the ID, and then the attribute selector. Now, we're not going to spend any time because we won't get to play with some fun CSS. But about 3 months ago, I did a webinar that walked everybody through the different ways of combining selectors. So I'd encourage you to go watch that. The idea of how do we combine selectors of a descendant selector, where we're going to match all list items that are underneath an unordered list. So we're not going to touch any of the ordered list ones. That's a descendant selector. Then you have things like block quote greater than paragraph. This is a child selector. So only the paragraph tags that are immediately after a block quote. And then we have an adjacent selector, H2 plus P. Now, remember how I said yesterday it's very important that we indent items. So when we indent items, this is where adjacent sibling selectors are helpful, because basically it's saying the H2, we're targeting the paragraph. You're always targeting the last element when you're combining them. We're looking for the paragraph that is at the same level as an H2 that appears before it. So where this would occur, let me just go back up here. We'll create something ourselves. So let's go to, here we are. Let's just do a paragraph. Let's add an H2, Muffin Man. Let me change this H2. Let me add color. Get rid of these just so that we can actually test this out. All right, so H2. Okay, so see, we're doing a selector of, it's immediately after the H2. But what if I did this? Block quote, Green Mountain. Green Mountain is here, but the paragraph is not immediately after. So again, if you want more on this type of combining selectors, we've already done a pretty, I think, a thorough webinar on that. It's in the library. Just do combining selectors and you will find it in the library. Okay, so now let's have a little fun and then we may look at the Chrome inspector on things that we can deal with. I'm going to get rid of a few items here so we can highlight a few elements. I just want to make sure we do have some text. Okay, so we do have some text down here. How many of you have ever watched a client or watched other people read content on a website? I would always encourage you, if you get the opportunities, watch how your clients use your website. Maybe even make it part of the contract that, you know, you'd like to observe how they use their website. Because if you learn how they use a website, you can customize little tweaks. But how many of you still do this? You're reading along and you kind of highlight as you read websites. A lot of people do this. Well, you can actually make it easier for a client to do this because not every browser will allow you to do this. And it is using a pseudo element called selection. So a pseudo element of selection allows us to say, hey, when anything is selected by the mouse, again, we're not using any JavaScript, anything we use in the selection, we're going to create a background color of 013896 and a text color of F1, F1, F1. So that now when this gets added to the site and they come over here, you can use the highlight of a base color for the website. It's not going to do anything. It's just whatever the mouse selects, we get information. The browser communicates information that the style sheet can use to modify. It doesn't mean anything is being selected, but sometimes if there's a lot of content, it's just something that makes the website that much more fine-tuned, because there's nothing worse than a beautifully designed website and then you have visitors who are coming here and highlighting things just because that's what they do. And the other thing people will do, they'll highlight something and then they'll take a screenshot because that's what they want. Why not us create a better looking screenshot by using the actual color schemes that come from the color palette for the website? So that's just one of those things that I think is, it's just a small bit of CSS. It shows how pseudo elements can be used, yet at the same time, it's not going to break the bank in terms of our time. But it's something that I think a lot of clients appreciate. The other one is drop caps. Now, we make fun of drop caps in Gutenberg because we're like, who uses drop caps? But in larger pieces of content, sometimes drop caps are great. But most people look at this and say, oh, we'll just do first letter. Well, not every browser, and especially not a lot of mobile browsers, don't support this pseudo class where they will, you'll do a paragraph first letter and every paragraph will do this and we can apply some stuff. So what I end up tending to do is not box drop cap. I am going to just create a CSS class that I can use whenever I want. I'm not going to have it programmed in to automatically do every single paragraph, but I'll do a 400% color, make it stand out, and then add the margins so that we know that for our fonts, we need space for the other items to go around. So once we have this class, and this is in the second page 7 or something on the handout. So once we have this item, we can come over and find our little text. And what I would end up doing is just do a span over the first class equals drop cap. I just do a span. So once I have my span, we get a nice looking, again, we may have to adjust the margin and everything, but it's just simply doing a pseudo class of first letter or first word. We're not going to do this for every single paragraph. We're not going to do this on every single page. It's just when you want it, go ahead and have this existing on your site. Now you, again, as I said, you may have to adjust the margins however you want, but it's one of those nice little features if a client wants something. Now, let's talk about something that a client will want and many of the clients will want today. Jen, great thing about the screen reader, it does nothing because the spans disappear. Any of those tags disappear and it just treats it as a straight word, like it, the opening and closing of a span tag in a screen reader is removed and just the letters remain. Okay, so we have an image here. I just grabbed an image that has a bunch of colors. It's a free image. Sometimes we want to add activity, action to a website for a client. And sure, you can put some motion, you can put some animation, but I think an easier thing to do is use a filter called a grayscale. A grayscale filter does some really cool things for images. So first, let's start with this. Basically, let's do a, what do I want to do with this? Let's do, we'll just, because we only have one image tag, we'll just go ahead and do image. The width 100% and overflow is hidden. So we'll, this way we can keep it in the browser. The image is just going to stay there. You can actually see the border here. It's not overflowing. Now, we will then take our image and provide a transition where we're going to transform it over 0.5 seconds. and the filter 0.5 seconds to ease in out. Now remember, when we use a transition, basically that's one element of the selector that is going to be changed when we hover, when we do something like this, image hover. So whatever is going to be in this declaration block is going to take 0.5 seconds to transform between this declaration block and this declaration block. Oh, I forgot one whole part of the declaration block here. So our filter is grayscale 100%. Did you just see what happened to the picture? We just made the picture go black and white, basically. So now, if the transition and the filter take 5 seconds to transition from maybe that width of 100%, or there's a reason why we have width 100%, because even though it's not declared in here, we're going to declare something over here where we're going to transform the scale. We're going to zoom in slightly. So we're going to transform. And if I do scale 1.1, we are zooming in from 0, because that's where we started from. And when we hover, we're going to zoom in. And then we're going to take our filter and add grayscale, but remove it. 0. So now, once this has been added and we hover over and we zoom in, we colorize the picture. Zoom out, you go back to black and white. So what a perfect way, if you're creating a website for a client where they have services that they offer and they give you great images. Now, the filter, I'm going to pull this up here. I'm going to pull up the thing. There's a number of CSS filters that, that one's a little bit more difficult to understand. So I'll just bring this over here. You can see this. We used grayscale. But if you take a look at the W3 schools or any of the just search CSS filter, you're going to see that there is the ability to do blur, brightness, contrast, adding a drop shadow, grayscale, hue, rotation, invert it, opacity, saturate, sepia color. There is so much that you can do with this filter. And all you need to do is, with the transition, it's taking 5 seconds, and the ease in out says what this transition is going to be, grayscale at 100%, and you zoom in. And so the perfect way that then maybe you also have, when this hovers, you have an image that shows up, or a title that highlights above it that says what type of service that you're doing. Now, you may not want the zoom. You don't need the zoom, the scale. You notice how it's like popping out. But if we did something like, let's just do a 25%. So it's much smaller there. So you can get it so it still pops, so it looks like it's part of the, let's add some margin left, 50 pixels. So we'll move it over. So there. So here's the other thing I want to point out. You guys notice something else on scaling an image. How many of you have ever done that hover and then font size 150%? So you get this like, okay, it gets bigger. What does it do to all the other stuff around it? Here, let's just do this. Let's come over here and do paragraph hover font size. Paragraph hover font size 250, let's do 150 pixels percent. So notice how it moves everything else. If we simply just do this, but if we use scale, the image is not moving anything. It's only the image that is getting scaled in. It doesn't affect the rest of our website. Whereas if we simply hover and make something big, it's going to blow everything else out or move everything around the website. So just, if you take anything away from this session of CSS, understanding what we can now do with scale and transforming and the filters of the grayscale, some really cool things that you can highlight. Perfect thing. This is the perfect thing for staff portfolio pages or the listing of all the employees, the photos of people who work there. Great way to just bring some color into it. Everybody else is black and white. You could sepia. See that? Let's do sepia. You don't have to. You can use any of the type of filters as you want. We could do blur. I think, I don't think blur was the, there may be some other variation here, but you get the idea. It's one of the really cool things you can do with CSS. All right, let's get rid of this. Sherry, yes, you'd use like a hue or a saturation. So you'd set like the RGB of the hue so you can actually have an overlay of a different type of color and then, you know, they hover over and it comes to the natural color or something. There, you can just have a lot of fun with that. All right, so let's come over here to list items. So I'm going to come up here just so we see. Here's our list items. We see them right here. If we set a UL where we say list style is none, that just got rid of the bullet points. And now we can come around and use HTML entities. Remember, HTML entities are all those like images that can be, that are Unicode, that can be added to text areas. So now we have, let's do li before. And this is where we have things like content. See where that check mark is? Boom. And so now we've just gone ahead and put check marks next to our item. And then if we wanted to, we can just keep doing this before content. And this time we'll just we'll go find an HTML entity. And what we're going to do here is let's do a UL li. No. So basically we'd have here class no equals no. So see how we now can add, we can hard code this where this ASCII stuff is the same as entities. But why would you do something like this? Is because sometimes we're writing blog posts. Not that we're looking for the users to check these boxes, or maybe we're writing landing pages and each step of the way we want to say, here you are at your step two, you check this box, you still have these items to go. It's not like this is going to be dynamically populated, so we can simply hard code what we need it to look like. Now, let me grab my character entities. So There's any number of web pages that you can do. W3.org has this massive list of entities. You just kind of scroll through all the entities and then you say, you know what, that's the one I want. Or we can come down and find some type of entity that exists. All right, let's get a phone. So notice how we have any of these entities that we can use. Or you can also just copy that, go back to our training class and say, we're going to use a phone. So now we have phones showing up as our bullet points. Not only have we not had to load an image, it's just much faster. So there's a speed element of using the before content area or the after content area in CSS. All right, there's two other ones, and then we're going to get one that we'll probably need duct tape on. So the first thing that we're going to talk about, we're going to go all the way up to the top, and I'm going to add a href. Let's call this one muffin.pdf. Click to download file. Okay, so we have a, and let's just go ahead and make sure that it's, so we have click to download file. One of the things that I think a lot of users like to know is where, if I'm downloading something, what is it that I'm downloading? So rather than me do something like this, Adobe Acrobat file, rather than doing that, and then having weird things also then show up in our SEO because it's in the content, we're going to use the ability to do an after. We talked about before, but we're going to use an element selector, sorry, an attribute selector. So if I simply do href, it does not matter if it's an image or an anchor or something else that's using href. We're simply saying if the href ends in PDF, whatever the attribute is after, we're going to add some content. And what are we adding? And I'm going to copy this so I don't make a mess of it. There is on some icon finder, you can grab different images. So see what we've now just done? Again, we might have to style it, move the item around. But now anywhere that uses PDF, we're going to add that. Maybe you want to add an Excel file or a Word document file for people to download. So all you have to do is one time in your CSS, just simply create the content, the after area with the URL of whatever the URL is for the document icon. And it will automatically insert itself after any href that exists on that on your site that ends in .pdf or .doc. So you can dive deep into thinking ahead for what anybody's sharing. So when a client uploads something and just uses the WordPress editor to attach a file or link a file in the editor area, you've already done the work that it's going to automatically add that icon. Now, notice what happens when they actually click the icon. Now you can't see it because what it's going to do is it's still included in this anchor tag. So our href is simply adding the URL that is still inside this anchor tag. So therefore, this Adobe Acrobat icon links to the actual file that you are looking to download. Just one of those neat little tricks that when you start using the content Just know that wherever you are attaching that content to, whatever element selector you're attaching that content, it's inside it. So it gets any of the effects, the link, the styling, anything there, the content gets affected by. All right. So now let's talk about this. Let's say, okay, notice how all the anchor tags have links, are underlined. So we can do in our CSS text decoration line underline, which is great. Those links are perfect. That's what's default. We can also do dashed. Are those actual links? Oh, what was I doing? Style. Dashed. Now that's a little weird. Dashed is off. Let me add the other one. Text. Let me put this back in. And then we have text decoration color, which is orange. So now we have orange here that's going on. But there's a lot we can do that is not just this. So if we start using just text decoration, where we can say it's an underline, overline. Oh, look, we just got an overline going over there. Dotted and green. I'm going to add some space to these just so it's a little bit easier to see. Where's our... Okay, just wanted to create a little bit of space there. So we can start doing underlines, overlines. Text decoration takes some really cool features. Dotted. What about if you just don't want anybody using that? We have a line through. Red. And all of a sudden we've now struck this. Now, what we do is these would all be like line height. Oops, hold on. I have to close this out. Basically, if we start adding in line height and spacing, we get it moved around. But there's one more I want you to see. So what if we do underline violet? Okay, so let's change the color. Wavy. So there's so much more that can be done than just simply an underline. We can overline it. We can dot it. We can line through. We can dash it. We can wavy the line. For whatever reason, you have that flexibility straight in CSS. Still operates the same way. Oh, the phone icon, that's just as simple as, where's my phone icon? You can add a space. Where's my phone icon? Oh, well, hold on. Now we're having multiple there. Okay, so see how if I keep adding space to this content area, well, that one didn't go. It'll take one. Yeah, it'll take one, but we can also do margin or padding right 20 pixels. So it'll move it over. I mean, so we can play with that if that was the question. And then we can do things with the underline. Now, the other thing is, rather than just do a straight underline, this is where we can have some fun hover. And so now, again, we would do something like a text decoration, text decoration none, so that it gets rid of the underline, but our hover brings in the, oh, we're hovering over the whole thing right now. But you see the idea. I don't know why it's sticking around. I think it may be the code pen issue. All right, our final advanced thing will require us to create a little custom HTML. This is anybody, any of your clients that actually are going to be creating documentation, things that require more header work, heading, title. And let's do a H2 subheading title. H2 subheading title. Heading title, oops. H1 heading title. You're going to see why I'm doing this in just a moment. Subheading title, H2, and we'll do another H1, heading title, and then we'll close it out. Okay, so this is fine. You can get your information across. But really, if we are writing a little more documentation type of system, I need a better way to say that these belong to this. I need like a numbering system, kind of like we use an unordered list. So what we're going to do here in our CSS, and the notes are there, I think, on page 7 or 8. We're going to go ahead and grab that ID, the page ID that exists right here. And we're going to use something called counter reset heading. So CSS has a built-in counter, things that are counters. So when I call upon the counter, I'm going to be able to identify all the headers. I'll identify all these selectors. And my counter reset means when I call the counter called heading at the top of the page, we're always going to start at 1. And you're going to see we're going to do something additional there. So let's take a look at the H1 tags. We want these H1s to have a special numbering system. So before every H1, we're going to do before. And so what did we do with it before? We add content. So what are we going to add? Instead of putting things in a single quote, adding some type of element, we're going to say, CSS, we want you to use your counter, and we want you to use the counter called heading. We reset the counter called heading. Again, it's arbitrary. You name it whatever you want. We're going to reset the counter called heading here. And then we're going to put a item there. Wait, let me put this here. Let me add one there. Okay. And then we're going to do counter increments heading. Counter heading. Let me save this. One second. It was working and then it wasn't working. Did you guys see the 0 earlier? Something I am doing is heading. I don't want to go on until I get this showing you. I don't think I need it in a single quote. Okay, please show it. Come on. Let's do this. Let's just change it. Counter head. Okay, one second. Oh, I see. Okay, I see it. I'll explain it in just a moment. Let me fix this. Okay, so heading. So here's what's happening. I already talked about resetting the counter. Basically, it sets it at zero. What counter are we talking about? The counter called heading. Every H1, the foreign H1, we're going to display the counter heading. And then we're going to put a closing parenthesis at the end. And then we're going to increment. What counter are we incrementing? The heading counter. So every H1 that shows up, we get a number automatically added to it. But then we say every single time you come to an H1 tag, see H1 tag, H1 tag, we want you to reset a new counter. We're calling this new counter called subheading. So that now every H2 that shows up, we grab the counter for heading, the current number that the counter heading is doing, put a period right here, and then grab the new counter called subheading that is reset every single time there is an H1 tag. And then we increment the subheading. So that if I come in here and say, you know what, let's add another H2 muffin man, it's gonna automatically go 1.3. If I add an H2 here, H2 green day, it automatically adds 2.2, 3. You can use this really cool feature called the counter in CSS. Now I'm doing it just with H1 or H2. What if we did this whole thing with unordered lists? You could do it with unordered lists so that you're just counting every single time you have a ordered list or an unordered list. But you can also do it with paragraphs. You can do it with any number of things that are going. One of the reasons where this might be beneficial is if you grab a documentation or a terms of service. If you've already built this part of the CSS, people can add any new sections to the terms of service. And it's going to automatically number it properly in the subsections that it's supposed to be. You don't have to go back and renumber anything. So I hope just taking a look at some of these counters, taking a look at the ability to add images based on content, and even playing around with this awesome image that we can use grayscale filters in CSS. As long as you know how to identify CSS elements on a page, really everything we've done has nothing to do with JavaScript. We don't need JavaScript counting things. And again, not to go on a rant, but this is part of the reason why we don't need advanced JavaScript for every single website. We don't need things like Gutenberg for every single website because we can do things with simply HTML, creating drop-down lists, and CSS, creating animation. All of that is always going to be faster than any JavaScript that you write. So hopefully you can play around with some of those code snippets and the things in the handout. You can get some ideas for where you want. I hope there's going to be lots of stuff coming. And John, yes, there is an update to the book. Yes, there's going to be example code and all sorts of things that you can play with. All right, everybody. Well, I got to take off and hear other people coming. So I hope you have a great rest of the day. And I'll get this recording uploaded and available as soon as possible.